follow along. It's on pages 229 and 226 in our pew Bibles. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Indeed, by faith, our ancestors received approval. By faith, we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was made from things that are not visible. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to set out for a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he set out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he stayed for a time in the land he had been promised, as in a foreign land, living in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked forward to the city that has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, he received power of procreation, even though he was too old, and Sarah herself was barren, because he considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one person, and this one as good as dead, descendants were born, as many as the stars of heaven, and as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. All of these died in faith, without having received the promises. But from a distance, they saw and greeted them. They confessed that they were strangers and foreigners on the earth. For people who speak in this way make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of the land that they had left behind, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country. That is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. Indeed, he has prepared a city for them.
Our gospel reading this morning is the one that you see in your bulletin reading from Luke 12. This is the text for the sermon. And I invite us now all to listen again for God's word. Jesus is speaking to his disciples here. He's been speaking to the crowds earlier in this chapter, and now he turns specifically to his disciples. And he says, "Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give alms. Make purses for yourselves that do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Be dressed for action and have your lamps lit like those who are waiting for their master to return from the wedding banquet so that they may open the door for him as soon as he comes and knocks. Blessed are those slaves whom the master finds alert when he comes. Truly I tell you, he will fasten his belt and have them sit down to eat, and he will come and serve them. If he comes during the middle of the night or near dawn and finds them so, blessed are those slaves. But know this, if the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. You also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour." This is the word of the Lord. This passage that I just read, we have in Luke this morning, is really sort of almost disjointed sounding brief set of instructions that Jesus gives to his disciples, probably not just his 12 disciples, but all of the disciples that are following him right at that moment. These verses can tie together, but they don't necessarily have to tie together. So that means that they can be taught in class, they can be preached either together or separately. If you noticed, if you were looking at your pew Bibles, the way your pew Bibles divide the verses. Verses 32 through 34 come under this subheading that says, do not worry. And then the rest of the passage that we have this morning comes under this subheading that is entitled, watchful slaves. It seems like an odd, sort of disjointed set of words from Jesus. First, he says, and he's really following, if we looked back, he's following a passage where he talks about treasures in heaven, storing up treasures in heaven, and being ready. He's already hit that theme. He says here, do not be afraid, little flock, the disciples, the church, the little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And then in so many words, Jesus makes his point larger here. What he says is that because God has given us his kingdom, because we can be assured of that already, we don't have to be obsessed with things. We don't have to be consumed and distracted and worried about material things. They just aren't important, he's saying, compared to the assurance that we already have that he's given us his kingdom. Another way of saying that, I think, is that all the things in our lives aren't important compared to God's rule, God's kingdom in our lives. You heard his exact words. Jesus says, and notice these words, he says, sell. Notice that word. Sell your possessions and give. Notice that word. Give to alms, give to charity. Sell and give. And he says, make purses for yourselves that do not wear out. And then this very familiar line, for where your treasure is, your heart will be there also. And then as we read, his instructions seem to jump. And it seems that as they do, his focus jumps to something very different. He suddenly talks about these servants here that have to be ready for their master who's returning from the wedding banquet, as was the custom in that day. And he says that they have to be ready at any time. If he comes during the night, they have to be ready. If he comes during the early morning hours around dawn, they need to be ready. The point is that whenever he gets there, they have to be prepared for him. And then there's another jump in the words, in the verses. And it's a strange jump. And maybe this is the one that catches our attention the most if we're really listening to it. Jesus uses this odd and unsettling image of God as a thief. He symbolizes God as a thief that comes in the night. Verse 39, again, he says, but know this, if the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. You also must be ready, for the Son of Man, he, Jesus, is coming at an unexpected hour. Now, I said as I started the sermon a minute ago that it's a sort of a conglomeration of verses that we have here, and they can tie together, and they don't have to tie together. But Jesus does have some common themes for us in this passage. And there's one theme that I want to focus on this morning and for the rest of the sermon. I'm going to focus on verses 33 through 34 as they proceed and as they lead into the last two verses in the passage, which are verses 39 and 40, because there's an important message for us in the way those two pieces of the passage go together. Listen one more time to verses 33 and 34 and listen to the emphasis on giving. Jesus says, sell your possessions and give to charity. Give alms. Make purses for yourselves that do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart also will be. And he's just used, in those, when he comes to those verses, he's just used an image, the image of a thief in some previous verses. And he's used that to say that we need to have our real true treasures in heaven. Because why? Because a thief can't get there. A thief can't take those treasures away. They can't get ruined by a moth. Jesus is saying that our worldly treasures, our material things, and especially the way that we put such high value on what we have and what we own, are always temporary. That attitude, that grasping, is always vulnerable to losing what we have. And then a few verses later, he picks up again on that image of the thief, but he uses it in a startling way about God himself. Verses 39 through 40, one more time. But know this, if the owner of the house had known when the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. So you must also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. In those verses, Jesus is saying that we always have to live as if he may come back at any time, at any moment in our lives. He's saying, be ready. Live ready for God to come to us. Don't be caught off guard. Always be prepared. And we'll come, by the way, to that theme again in Advent a few months from now. To me, at least, this image of God as a thief, and he uses it a couple of other places too in the Gospels, is unsettling. It's surprising. Now, why would he jump from words like sell and give and unfailing treasures in heaven, and where your treasure is, that's where your heart really is. Why would he jump from there to a thief breaking into a house? Well, if you think about it, all the way through the Gospels, Jesus' teachings and his stories and his parables sometimes have a remarkable way of catching us and jolting us so that maybe we can hear what he really wants us to hear. And I have a feeling that he's doing that here in his words in this passage. He's surprising us. He's shocking us so that we'll really listen to what he's trying to tell us. And let's face it, the idea of God as a thief is unexpected and it's surprising. William Willimon tells the story in one of his sermons a few years back about the time that his mother's house was broken into. He says, my mother lived for 46 years in a house that she designed from the ground up. She'd supervised every detail of the construction of that house from native stone and wood. And he said, and the house seemed to symbolize for her everything that she loved and valued. She loved that house. But then it happened. One weekend while she was traveling, thieves broke in. They rifled through a lot of her stuff. They took just some of her belongings, not by any means everything. And he says that the monetary loss was not great, that she lost some jewelry that had sentimental value. But he said she was never able to live there again. In her words, she said, I feel violated, as if the inner sanctum of my life has been destroyed. And within 3 months, they moved her out into a condo into the city where he and his family were living, all because of the work of a thief. I remember having some of the same sense of rage and disgust at my mom's vulnerability when something like that happened to her. The first house that she lived in after Dad died, she had to scale down in size in the house from the church's manse to another house. One day she was, a couple of years after she'd been in the house, she was maybe 100 or 150 feet from the house out in the backyard, not facing the back door. And while she was out there raking leaves, some thieves came in and they took all of her mother's and all of her grandmother's china and silver. Now, she was worried about that, obviously, but mostly she was worried sick, and so were my sister and I, about what could have happened if she had walked into the house while they were there. Thievery is an intrusion. It's a form of violent, sudden intrusion in our lives, and it always makes us have a range of emotions, I think. But I think most of all, it makes us feel vulnerable. I know when I lost a laptop a few months ago, I used my floodlights for a whole week. I never do that. As important as that sense of vulnerability is, though, those emotions, we're also jolted by something else. And it may be for a moment before we pass on from it. But when that kind of experience comes, I think we are jolted by realizing how fleeting and insecure our hold is on the material possessions and on the values that we put on them. And I think when Jesus used the image of God the thief, he must have meant exactly that, because he really and truly wanted his disciples to hear and wants us to hear and to understand that being faithful to him, being ready for him to come back, has everything, every moment of our lives to do with our attitude toward things, our attitude toward material things and the value we place on them and the grip that we hold on them as if they can give us ultimate security. And a lot of times I think we try to bail out on these passages in the Gospels. We say, well, it's not really the things, it's the attitude. Now, that's true, but he says repeatedly that when we put our life, when we put our dependence, when we put our values, when we over-enjoy things, then it inevitably distracts from our worship of him. I think this is the gist of the passage this morning. I think Jesus is teaching us, and I think he's shocking us if we need that, to tell us that our attitude toward all the material things in our lives, and more specifically the value that we place on the things that we have, can always get in the way of following him and can always get in the way of making him the first priority in our lives. Because to completely follow Jesus, we have to have, and I sort of thought of this word last night, we have to have a certain spiritual detachment from worldly things and worldly values. I want to change the point now as I finish off the sermon. I have just maybe said what is the negative lesson from Jesus in this passage, but he's already put a positive lesson in there. He says, sell your possession and give to charity, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We might not think of those as positive words, sell and give, but when we have a giving spirit, we're living a very positive life. Jesus, in these words, I think, is giving us a great freedom. He's saying that to faithfully follow him, to be ready for him to come into our lives, always means giving of ourselves. He was able to do that every moment of his life because he put his values in God's kingdom and not in the values of this world. A great Baptist preacher and pastor died probably 20 years ago, I think. Carlisle Marnie is a name some of you may have known. Dr. Marnie often said, faith is a verb. He said, faith is not a possession and something that we have and hold on to. Faith is an activity. It's a never-ending movement in response to an ever-seeking God. Jesus shocks us with God the thief, and he shakes up our priorities and values. But really and honestly, doesn't it still take a shock too often to help us to focus on, to understand what the truest values in life are? How many times have we recalled, how many times have we even shuddered at the images of the terrorists crashing those planes into the Twin Towers on September 11th, 2001, and the towers collapsing in that scene that literally was a scene from hell? At least as vivid, though, as that image that was repeated hundreds of times were the images of inexpressible giving, an inexpressible outpouring of giving. Hearts opened up, hands opened up, crushed spirits that were still in shock and disbelief somehow reached down and found a strength to open up and give. And we ought to remember those images too. The news didn't cover that as much. But remember that unforgettable outpouring of generosity from all over the country, really from all over the world. In New York City, there was such an outpouring of people to come into the site, if you remember, giving clothes, giving food, giving toiletries, even giving toothpaste, that the Red Cross was so swamped they couldn't use it all. People lined up forever to give blood. It was absolutely overwhelming. And I think it makes us have to wonder, what does it take? What kind of thief in the night has to come to us for us to listen and us to realize and to understand that where our treasure is where we'll find our heart? Amen.